Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk about living the food life in Philadelphia and beyond. This week, we're talking about black rice, why names matter, and all those Facebook cooking videos. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week. So, after years of being the sort of Susan Lucci to other cities, Philadelphia finally won big at the James Beard Awards.
Multiple awards, big national categories. I thought I was dreaming there for a sec.
I know, it was really exciting.
For anyone that doesn't know, the James Beard Restaurant Awards are commonly referred to as the Oscars of the food world. It's a very splashy, prestigious award.
Yep, everybody gets dressed up.
Typically, Philly is just shut out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been years since we won anything. And what's crazy is, I mean, we've had such a restaurant renaissance over the last few years, but we really just haven't gotten the acknowledgement for it. Yet another reason why we get really tired about, you know, talking about places like New York and LA and Chicago.
Right.
Because we have always felt like we're doing just as well and no one's giving us the acknowledgement. But.
Now our people brought home some medals.
Yeah, they did. So Stephen Starr was named the best restaurateur in America after 4 years as a finalist. And one of his New York restaurants won for best new restaurant.
So pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Hometown hero, Stephen Starr.
It's true.
I like his places.
Yeah, what I like about Stephen Starr restaurants is that they are deeply reliable. You always know that you're going to have really good food. The experience is going to be fun. And, you know, there's nothing that's going to let you down about a Stephen Starr restaurant for the
most part. In a way, he really laid the foundation for what we have now, because his restaurants at the time really were the best, the most forward thinking in terms of food.
Yeah, it's true. And
they're certainly stylish. I find myself looking in Stephen Starr restaurants for light fixture inspiration. You know, they always look amazing.
Yeah, they are really beautifully designed. I mean, I love the experience of going to a Stephen Starr restaurant. Like, every part about it is going to be a really sort of satisfying experience, from the decor to the food.
Agreed.
And Michael Solomonoff, Joy.
I know. He might have been the last one to bring home an award in 2011 when he won for Best Chef Mid-Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
But now he won the big Kahuna Award, Best Chef USA.
Yay, Mike.
So congratulations to Michael Solomonoff, Steve Cook, and the entire Zahav team. One of our most amazing restaurants.
It's true.
As I was thinking about this segment, you've eaten there, right?
I have, although it's been years. And I actually wanted to go again recently, and it is now impossible to get a reservation.
It is. It really and truly is.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we should all keep trying, but it's not easy.
No, I actually had set, like, a timer on my calendar once recently to see if, like, I could get them for the day that they were opening up that day.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I looked at, like, 9:30 in the morning, it was all gone.
Were you calling or were you open tabling?
I was open tabling.
I actually think that calling gives you a big leg up.
Okay. Good to know. Next time I'll call.
Yeah. It's rare that I am so desperate for a reservation that I'm willing to, like, put a lot of effort in. And I have been to Zahav many times, but it's getting to be time to go back, I think.
Yeah.
I can get in line behind all the other people that want to go now. Greg Vernick of Vernick Food and Drink won Best Chef Mid-Atlantic.
Which I'm ashamed to confess I still haven't been there.
Especially since it's your neighborhood restaurant.
It's 2 blocks from my apartment. It's just been so hard to get a reservation, and now it's even harder.
I know they too save tables for walk-ins.
Okay, all right.
And they have a pretty large bar.
Okay.
So if I were you and I wanted to eat there, I would go in on the early side and try to nab a bar seat.
All right, sounds good.
God, the food there is so good.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, you
someday.
We've said these very words on the podcast before, that you need to get
true.
Over there.
It's true.
And then finally, this is, I was talking about this with my husband, Dan, and he said that Sam, do you know how to say his last name?
Calagione?
Calagione of Dogfish Head Brewery. I hope he's Italian. We just made him sound really Italian.
It looks pretty Italian to me.
He's based in Delaware, obviously, but we think of him as local. But he won for Outstanding Wine, Beer, and Spirits Professional on his 7th nomination.
Amazing.
So go, Sam.
Yeah, it's delightful how well our chefs and restaurateurs did.
I was really happy to see all the gold stars for Philly.
Yeah.
And it's about time.
Absolutely.
Though conversely, I sometimes think that, like, awards like this are kind of meaningless and, like, we know what we have. But I always... I would like to see our name in lights.
It's meaningless in the sense that we still have good restaurants, regardless of whether they win. But it is nice to see people who are working so hard and doing such a good job get acknowledged.
You know, I was working at a New York food media outlet that shall remain nameless in Zahav's early years. And you should have seen me trying to get it attention.
Wow.
No one cared. No one believed me and no one listened.
How wrong they were.
They were not right.
All right, Joy. Well, what's for dinner?
Let's move on to less glittery territory here. What we're eating for dinner. I have been kind of into black rice recently.
Tell me more.
Do you buy it and cook it?
I have bought it once or twice and cooked it, but it's just not something that's on my regular radar.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a little bit harder to find and a little bit more expensive than typical rice varieties, but it is super nutritious.
It's
full of antioxidants, vitamins, and fiber, to the point that nutritionists think of it as a superfood. And
that's awesome.
I find it extremely delicious. To me, it tastes like a cross between brown rice, wild rice, and like a wheat berry because it has like a certain juiciness. It's chewy.
Which I love.
And I especially love it at cooked pilaf style.
Uh-huh.
And you can put all kinds of other vegetables in it at that point.
Wait, I think we need to go back. So can you describe how you cook it pilaf style?
Yeah, when I say pilaf style, I mean you get some fat going in a skillet that has a lid or a saucepan that has a lid. It can be butter, olive oil, ghee, coconut oil, whatever floats your boat. And then I add some kind of onions or shallots or leeks or what have you, green onions. Or you could also add at this point like celery and red pepper or whatever. Then you toast the rice until it like in just the fat until it gets nice and toasty.
Yeah.
And this helps the grains remain separate and not really be sticky. It gives it almost a fluffiness. Then you add the water, cover it. And I actually did the black rice the way I do brown rice, which is then put it in the oven.
Oh.
It's a more even heat. You get more even cooking, I think.
I've never tried that. I'll have to do that next time.
And it's it was just really good. Hot, you know, reheated in the microwave with like an egg on top or cold right into a salad. It was really, it's really a... lighting up my lunchtime food passion lately. It's also known as forbidden rice, by the way.
Okay.
In case people are looking to buy it. And there was another recipe that I was really into, which is a grain salad with roasted butternut squash and pomegranates.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a little past pomegranate season at this moment, obviously, but I'll put the recipe in the show notes. It's super tasty.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like a recipe like that uses pomegranates in one season. Then as you head into spring, you can dice up some strawberries or use some like blueberries
or
something like that.
Agreed.
So,
and one of the ingredients that makes this particular salad very special is the smoked paprika.
Mm.
It's really earthy and super good, filling, hearty.
Yeah.
I give 5 stars to black rice.
Well, I have always enjoyed it. There's a fast casual restaurant, Agno, at like 21st and Chestnut, where, you know, you can get like – either a salad or some, but one of the options they offer as a base is black rice. And I often choose that when I go there because I do like that nuttiness. And for some reason, I felt like it was more complicated, even though I've done it a couple times. Like somehow it was harder than regular rice, but obviously it's not.
I didn't do it in the Instant Pot, but I bet it would be great in the Instant Pot. I'll have to try that and report back.
Yeah.
And it's like right in the bulk bin at Whole Foods.
Could not be easier.
So just something to keep in mind if you're trying to like turn up the volume on your nutrition or your whole grains and or just flavor as I always am.
Very fun.
Let's talk about something that has been under your skin this week.
Yeah. So maybe a week ago or so, I saw a blog post on where someone was writing about beet hummus. And I thought, I like beets. I like hummus. Let me read through this recipe. And as I read through, I realized that while it was a dip with beets in it, nowhere did it include chickpeas or beans of any kind. And to me, that, you know, that pushed it out of hummus territory. To me, for something to include, to be called a hummus, it needs to have some sort of legume. And the reason that it was a legume-free hummus was that this was a paleo website. The paleo diet avoids legumes, so I get it. But I would have called it cashew beet dip or something like that rather than go for a, you know, a name that has a meaning.
Right. Well, in your view, what must something have to be hummus? Does it have to have tahini?
I really feel like it needs to have beans or legumes of some kind.
But the tahini to you is optional.
I mean, it certainly gives it its traditional hummus taste, but I feel like to take the chickpeas or any kind of bean out of hummus, then it's just a dip. It's a other kind of dip.
I feel like the tahini and the hummus are both required to be, I'm sorry, the tahini and the chickpeas are both required to be hummus. Yes.
I mean, I would never make hummus without tahini. So I guess, and I don't remember if this recipe included tahini.
My favorite recipes for hummus are like almost half tahini.
Well, it does make it delicious.
You know, so I don't know. Does it have tahini?
It does. It has 2 tablespoons of tahini.
Well, that's very little tahini. But yeah. That would still tick the box for me if it also had chickpeas.
But it's mostly far and away beets and cashews.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I mean,
creamy beet and cashew dip or something.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm sure it's really tasty.
Yeah, I'm sure it's great. But so it really started, and I sent you an email. Mm-hmm. And so you said this would, you know, and I think you're right that when is something not what we, you know, like what it, when you take one too many ingredients out of something that is a traditionally, you know, it's like you have an association with something. What is the thing you take out and it suddenly isn't that thing anymore?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And I actually ran across an example of this. And I'm sorry if this is one of our friends who posted this on or one of our podcast listeners and I saw it. But panzanella, when you take out the bread and substitute quinoa, that's not panzanella anymore.
No.
Panzanella, it's bread salad.
Yeah.
I actually feel like you can sub out the tomatoes more readily.
Yeah, you can make an all green panzanella, or, you know, but yeah, it needs the bread.
Do you have anything else?
Mock apple pie. Have you ever heard of that one?
It's got Ritz crackers in it. Yes, not apple pie.
Not apple pie.
I've never eaten it, though. Have you?
I haven't. I vaguely remember some episode of Growing Pains my childhood
where
they talked
about
it. So strange.
I became very fascinated with the recipe at one point. I was like looking into it. I never considered making it, but I was like, this is so strange.
Yeah.
I also sort of in that category is Snicker apple salad. This is Midwestern. Have you heard of this?
I have.
That's not a salad.
Well,
I don't even know what that is.
There's a whole class of salads that are called salads where I'm like, that is not a salad. Like a Jell-O salad. It sure might be Jell-O, but that ain't no salad. Or, you know, like a salad that consists of like cubes of cheese and ham and mayonnaise. That is not a salad.
A salad needs to have vegetables.
At least
onions and celery.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like there are these categories of things.
I have more.
Yeah, go for it.
Also, Melissa Clark's controversial pea guacamole recipe.
Yeah, that one irked me.
With peas and with the avocado.
Yeah, that's not right.
Maybe a dip of some kind. Mm-hmm. But like, if you tell me that it's guacamole and I take a dip of it, it's going to be very disappointing to me.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that there are a lot of these things that happen as people start, you know, adhering to alternative diets or become vegan. You know, I like a lot of fake meat, but I don't like it when someone calls it something, like says it's like chicken and it's not chicken.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this brings me to like, and with all apologies to you, I know this is something you make. Cauliflower pizza? No. I mean, maybe is it tasty? I don't know, but it's not pizza.
It's a casserole. It's more of like a bake or a casserole. I get that. Yeah, I mean, like cauliflower breadsticks are another one.
Right.
And, not bread.
The carrot hot dog? Do you remember when this like made all the Instagram rounds?
Yes.
Basically, you roast a carrot or boil a carrot and season it up with plenty of salt and maybe like a smoked paprika or something, and then you put it on a hot dog roll with ketchup or mustard. Oh my God, that sounds terrible to me. And it is definitely not a hot dog.
No.
And then as I sort of like, I don't know what I started Googling to try to find other examples, but apparently a few years ago there was this big controversy over the New York Times ran a recipe for white bolognese, which is like the famous Italian meat sauce but without tomato. And apparently people flipped out. You cannot have bolognese without tomatoes, apparently.
Yeah.
And I'm inclined to agree. But as you know, I am basically a classicist.
Yeah.
When it comes to foods, I like things to be recognizable as what they are. I like traditional recipes. I like rules. I like to know what to expect.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I do acknowledge that food shifts over time and that we need to make space for those changes. But you can call it a beet cashew dip and not besmirch the word hummus.
Well, the other thing is, I think that that it just goes to show how far the word hummus has been stretched in the supermarket and at restaurants.
That is, you know, true.
It's really become a catch-all term for a family of vegan dips, you know, like, which I don't approve of.
Yeah.
And the many varieties of hummus in the supermarket is rage-inducing in me. Because it's such a simple foodstuff. Like,
yeah.
Come on. I mean, I remember when I was in college and I didn't have a food processor and I wasn't especially into cooking. I used to make it in a gallon-sized resealable plastic bag. I drained the chickpeas. I put them in the plastic bag. And then I used a skillet. Like, I just beat on the chickpeas in the plastic bag until they were mush. And then I used that to make my hummus. And it still yielded a better tasting product than what you get in the typical supermarket tub.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to rant about that, but really, people, make your hummus.
I like the image of you smashing chickpeas in a plastic bag.
I did that for years. I'm sure you remember a time in your life before you had a food processor, or maybe you don't. I don't know.
One came with my apartment, so I had a food processor from the age of like 23, but I didn't utilize it as well as I should have.
Well, let's talk about something from the internet that's been getting under my skin.
Yeah, lay it on me.
I know I probably bring this on myself by clicking on everyone on Facebook, mm-hmm. but those shot from above recipe videos, do you see a lot of them?
I do, and I will confess that sometimes when I have like 5 minutes of downtime, I'll seek them out to see like what people are making on them.
First of all, I find them very entertaining.
Yeah, they're fascinating.
But they make me, at the same time, angry.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. One is like a lot of times I see them doing stuff that is like just blatantly wrong. Like I've seen a tiny mince of garlic go in a cast iron skillet, go into like a 400 or 500 degree oven for like a 10 minute period and then come out blonde. I'm like,
Nope.
Doesn't happen that way. That's like a way to burn your garlic and make your dish taste terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen that kind of stuff too. A lot of it falls under like the gimmicky category of like, this looks cool, but why would I ever do this? For me, an example of that is, have you seen, they put like a bunch of rigatoni upright in a springform pan. Have you seen this?
Yes, I think so.
So every individual tube of pasta is placed on end and then meat sauce is poured over it. And like then there's cheese and it's baked and it like makes a real cool picture. I would never try to make that. Another one I've been seeing a lot of lately is this big bacon tart. Have you seen this?
I've seen them do interesting things with bacon, but
there's like an enormous number of slices of bacon, maybe 40 or 50,
and a
cast iron skillet. And then they arrange the bacon in a pinwheel pattern starting at the center of the cast iron skillet so that you have basically a crust of bacon along the bottom of the pan with bacon overlapping outside. And then on the inside, it's thinly sliced potato layered with cheddar. And then the slices are folded over the middle.
I have seen this.
The whole thing is baked. And not only have I seen this, I saw your friend of mine, Sarah Gray, made it.
Oh, and I missed that.
She Facebooked, documented the whole thing. And it looks pretty good. I mean, like, I can't recall. I don't eat 40 pieces of bacon a year. You know what I mean? Like,
me either. I just think about the grease bomb that would be.
So there's that one. But anyway, this is just sort of like in the ether. And do you ever like sort of fall for this stuff and try something that you see in one of these videos?
I really look at those videos as entertainment and not inspiration.
I usually do too.
I do like, so I mean, I've never made anything from them because in part I know that often they're borrowing or stealing their recipes from other people.
That's another issue.
I figure most of what they make on those things is not something I actually want to eat. Like I don't want to eat 40 slices of bacon. You know, I've seen the ones where they do like a bacon mat where they weave it together and then wrap it around things. So for me, I don't look at it as something where I want to make it. I simply look at it as entertainment. Like, this is simply, you know, brain fluff.
And a lot of times you see stuff that you know is being done for the visual effect and not the flavor effect. And like, I'm all about the flavor.
Yeah.
I put, as an example down here, there's a one where they use like a vegetable peeler to get thin ribbons of various colors of squash and zucchini. And then they twist them into like rosettes.
Mm-hmm.
Then they use a pastry crust, some like ricotta beaten with eggs. And then they insert in that filling, all these little rosettes, and then they drizzle it with olive oil. And it looks pretty, but
it's not going to taste like much.
I don't really know how delicious that would be.
I will say I like the international ones. Have you fallen down the
potato bacon one? It's like German.
I like the Japanese ones.
Oh, I have seen some Japanese. The wiggly cheesecake? Have you seen that one?
Yeah, they're fun.
I
like all the cooking they do in rice makers.
Sometimes, though, I just get it in my mind that I'm going to make something. Like, for example, I recently saw blender lemonade. This is from a few years ago. Have you seen this?
Is it where they use the whole lemon?
The whole lemon, like a cup and a half of water, a few ice cubes, and a couple of tablespoons of sugar.
I love lemonade. Yeah.
I'm on a real non-alcoholic beverages kick right now, so I tried it. Not good.
Oh, yeah?
It's just bitter and weird and tastes like a lemon pine sol or something. I threw it right down the drain with disappointment.
That is disappointing.
Although on another occasion, there was like basically a real simple roasted vegetable dish with Brussels sprouts and red peppers. And then you make like an avocado sauce to squirt over it when it's done.
That sounds good.
It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, done mostly for the pretty colors and like the fun video, but I don't know if I would have made that exact thing if I didn't see the video.
One thing that I'm really liking is seeing how the popularity of the Tasty videos are inspiring people who I like their cooking to try more video making. So like Heidi Swanson has been making short little cooking videos lately.
I haven't seen them in that same style.
Mostly. So she will do a little introduction of herself, like talking about the recipe. Mm-hmm. And then she positions a camera up over a little, you know, coil portable burner and makes stuff. And her recipes are far more interesting to me than anything that I've seen on Tasty.
Is it edited in that same style where you see the words with the ingredients and then there's like things are fast forwarded through or skipped?
There is some fast forwarding. I don't think she adds any words because that, you know, post-production stuff is a little bit complicated.
Right.
But for the most, I mean, and they're a little longer, but they satisfy that same sense of like, let me watch someone else make this. And, you know, in 2.5 minutes, you go from nothing to a finished dish.
One thing for me, it just makes me miss the early days of the Food Network or the, you know, I love watching people cook on TV. And there's just, it seems like there's so much less of it now.
Yeah, there's hardly any actual just like, you know,
cooking
on either the Food Network or the Cooking Channel.
Is there anything at all that you like?
No, I mean, I've been turning to YouTube for some cooking videos lately. There's this I think they're called like the Green Brothers or something like that. They're young, you know, 20 something dudes, but this one of them, he will record his, like, he'll go to the farmer's market and then record a day of cooking from what he bought at the farmer's market. And I really like those. Like, that's fun.
That is fun. What is it called again?
I think it's the Green Brothers.
We'll
link to it.
From the earliest days of Dan and I spending weekends together, we like to make breakfast and then have our breakfast and coffee while we watch. And in those early days, it was Good Eats. We always watched. It was so nice. And I have spent, you know, all these years trying to still have that. And like now we try to watch America's Test Kitchen or Cook's Country, but there just isn't enough of that.
Yeah.
So I think that's what draws me to the Tasty videos and other videos like that. I don't know. It's not as pleasurable as like watching it in front of the TV with your coffee on the weekend, but and the recipes obviously do not always turn out that great, but it's fun.
Yeah. No, I agree. I have always loved just cooking shows. I remember when I was a kid and I'd be homesick, like the thing I would search out was The Frugal Gourmet because there he was making really interesting looking things, and that was fun.
If you out there have made any Tasty videos or other Facebook video recipes and you like them or you didn't like them or you just think we should see them, can you post in the comment section? We really are very interested in what people are making and looking at these days.
Yeah, and if you have any thoughts on this topic, you know, at all. Like, are you watching the international ones? Do you hate them? Do you love them?
Right. We want to know.
Yep.
Time for the market.
Yeah. So, snow pea tips.
I'm obsessed with snow pea tips.
Where are you getting them?
I go to the Asian market.
Okay. And tell us about them.
They're a springtime green. Uh-huh. They are a bit more expensive than other Asian greens. And every year I go through a phase where I just eat a lot of them. I went to Veg with my sister when she was here to celebrate our 100 days of not drinking.
Yay!
And that's a segment for another day. and they had the pea tips on the menu, and I ate them and loved them. And then the very next day, I went to the Asian market at 12th and Washington and bought myself a big heap of them.
Uh-huh.
And I just cooked them very simply in, you know, just a little canola oil with a mix of chopped ginger, garlic, scallion, and chili, like broken up dried chilies. And it's like both Dan and I can just eat a ton of them. They're so good. That's pretty much the only way I make them. But then a little sesame oil at the end. Do you like them? Have you had them?
I love them. I have certainly had them over the years. I've never cooked them myself, but whenever they're on like a special menu at a Chinese restaurant, mm-hmm. I will order them because I just love how bright and crunchy and fresh they are.
They seem sweeter. I feel like they have more complexity of flavor. They have those interesting hot tech from a texture standpoint, the hollow stems, like the leaves are delicate and wonderful. I have not seen them in regular grocery stores, but you can usually find them at the Asian market. And if you get confused as to which one they are, they're the expensive one. I mean, by Asian grocery store standards.
How much did you pay for them?
I think maybe $5.99 for like a pound.
Yeah. I mean, but when you consider that they're something that only comes around for a brief period of time, and they are so delicious. I've also seen them sometimes as snow pea shoots rather than tips.
Yeah, they call them all kinds of different things. Pea shoots, pea tips. There's other, I think actually in our Asian grocery store, it said bean tops. but I know what they look like, you know, so you might see them labeled in any number of a different way. If you do a Google image search, you get a good feel for what they're like. And they could not be easier to cook. They need very little time. There's probably a million other ways to cook them. If there's something, somebody that you know that you like to eat them, please tell me because I will be buying them more times.
Well, and I did a little bit of Googling when you put them on the list. And it does say that you want to remove the little coily bits because they're tough.
If you see them. I have never bought a bag of greens that had them.
Really? And are you buying the bags prepackaged, or do they have like a pile and you fill your own bag?
They have pre-filled bags at my particular Asian market.
And what did you serve them with?
Again, this is a topic for another show, but I made a miso glazed salmon.
Ooh.
And then another night I made miso glazed eggplant.
That sounds really delicious.
Or sometimes I would serve them with a bunch of other vegetables stir fried with them, or with, you know, and of course rice.
Yeah.
They really are feast unto themselves, though.
So we actually have about a minute left. And so you're talking about cooking, Joy. Mm-hmm. You have a finished kitchen now, right?
I have all the equipment going. Well, almost all the equipment going in my kitchen.
This is very exciting.
I have the range. My induction cooktop is firing on all cylinders. I have my oven. I have my sink and my dishwasher. I have my refrigerator. And Dan has put the vent up, but it doesn't work right.
Okay.
So we need to get a professional to come look at it. So until I haven't been able to like do hamburgers or sear a steak or anything like that, that's my only thing. And not to be a complainer, but I don't have cabinet doors. I went with an island in the end, and my island has no countertop surface. I'm currently trying to decide between butcher block and stainless steel. Do you have a...
I vote for stainless steel because it's... In the end, it's less maintenance.
I think I'm leaning towards stainless steel. And we have these built-in pantries that we just signed a contract yesterday for someone to do. They'll be done by, do you want to guess when?
August?
July.
No, that's not bad.
So, I mean, it'll get done eventually. I don't think there's any way to get it done sooner.
Well, it's exciting, though. You've got a kitchen.
Okay. Well, that's the latest. And that's it for this week's installment of Local Mouthful. Thank you, Dan Call, for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for our music. And thank you, Philly Cam, where we're recording right now. Thank you for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.